And we're back here on Unusual Sources 93.3 CFMU FM, bringing you the news and views you don't get to hear in the corporate media. And you know very well we're going to be doing that today. We have with us today Montreal-based academic, peace and social justice activist Amir Massoumi. I think we have him on the line. Amir, can you hear me?
Yes. Hello.
So, Amir, as I'm catching you here, I understand you're on your way out somewhere. I think you're heading on a trip. Can you tell us about what you're heading to?
Yes, I'm planning to go back to Syria. As you may know, I've been in Syria with an international delegation for peace and reconciliation last May. So I was invited by Mother Agnes to go back eventually to contribute to her activities and contribute to huge work that she is doing with different communities, with the children, with the refugees, and inside Syria and outside Syria, and all the huge task for facilitating the dialogue and reconciliation and peace among all Syrians.
Wow, this opens up a whole bag of questions. You say going back, as we may know, which means, of course, you have been to Syria before on a trip. Some of our listeners may know about that, but others may not be so familiar. So you have been working on a solution in Syria for the past 6 months, or even as far back as maybe two and a half years in your case. So what was this this original peace mission to Syria that took place back in, what was it, May?
Yes, it was the beginning of the May, but the historically goes even more back. Since the beginning of this crisis, we was thinking to find and somehow to find a way to back, not acting for or as Syrian people paternalistically, because we believe the Syrian, they are enough mature and enough adult to help themselves and to find a solution for themselves. And exactly one of the problem of the Syrian situation is the foreign intervention. But very modestly, we wanted to show our solidarity to the Syrian people and to back all the grassroots efforts for peace and dialogue. That's why we finally could go to Syria after several attempts and several months waiting, mainly because of the security issues.
Wow, okay. So what you're saying so far is you wanted to work on a solution towards peace in Syria, but in a non-paternalistic way. You're not coming in from outside telling people what to do. You want to learn what they're doing and how they're doing it. In that case, you know, what did you do on the trip? Who did you talk to, or you know, how did you find out what kind of peace efforts were in existence?
In fact, they are many grassroots groups, many different neighborhood committees, local committees who are working since the beginning of this crisis. Unfortunately, in the West, especially in the mainstream medias, we don't talk about the reality. And I'm amazed, I'm really shocked. They don't even say the truth. There are a lot of myths around Syria and very, very misinformation. For example, before directly responding to answering your question, those rhetorics, those repetition of the personalization of the conflict, the demonization of, for example, President Assad, as they did it with Saddam Hussein and with Gaddafi and with Ahmadinejad and others. We are not taking side to defend Saddam or Gaddafi or Ahmadinejad or Assad. But those kind of personalization and demonization of the conflict, as you hear most often, they said Assad killed the civilian. Assad chemical attack, Assad regimes. So those kind of rhetoric, that they are the temptation. They are the tools to operate as facilitate the aggression and the murder.
I see what you're saying here. If you look at our media here in Canada and the United States and the West generally, what this reflects is how they've made this whole conflict, this whole thing about Assad, the way it's described.
Exactly. And they are talking about the Assad tribe or Assad, the Alawite minority. They are talking and they are repeating more than 100,000 people victim of this conflict. But they never said. The majority of the government, of the Syrian government and army, they are Sunni. They are from other minorities, and the Alawite, they are a very small minority in the power, and they don't say that President Assad, he became Sunni officially, and he is not anymore Alawite. But they are talking about more than 100,000 victims, and so we never say who are those victims.
Right, because a lot of them are unfortunately also soldiers on both sides.
Yes, army soldiers, and over 40%, and among the civilian, a huge number are the Alawites, which is not more than the 14% of the population.
Yes, what you're referring to is two separate issues. One of them is the sectarian narrative we're getting from the United States and the allies, where they tell us this is all the fault of family of Assad, 200 people, some the Alawites, which then directs attention, negative attention and violence.
Absolutely.
That's very dangerous. But the other thing is this infantile discourse, this infantilizing discourse, where we're just supposed to believe that, you know, 100,000 people were killed by a government, that they're all victims of one side.
Yeah, actually, they don't say that directly, but this is they mean that. Without when they talk about more than 100,000 people. Another point, since 30 months that this crisis has been started, they are talking, even from the beginning, very beginning, they are talking about the civil war. There is no civil war in Syria. We've been there. There is a proxy war. There is a war between already planned war since 99, yes, the last years of the 20th century, yeah. The plan and the documents now are there, what we have access to, and then they are started to reshape the region, and they wanted to they had a plan for some specific countries, and we know about that, and they start to train, finance, arming, and especially transferring the different mercenaries from all over the world. This is a very important point. Rarely we talk about. We are talking about the moderate rebels. We have to say, honestly, there are less and less moderate rebels in Syria, because the majority of those rebels, they are foreign mercenaries. We are talking now about over 150 to 200,000 people, the Salafis, jihadists, who came from over 50 different countries, including Canada. Personally, when I was in Homs in the last May, the city and the region controlled by the rebel, and I visited that area, I met with the Canadian. And he was surprised to see me from Canada, and I was even more surprised. And he confirmed he has other comrades from Canada.
Yes, there have actually been reports in Canadian news and in German news and other news sources about fighters coming over the border in Syria. They're coming from Canada. In fact, we seem to be launching a disproportionate number of militants into Syria. It's very interesting, though it's not talked about very much.
No, but we have the mercenaries from all over the Europe, European countries. For example, just a couple of weeks ago, we had a conference in Belgium. The mother of those young people who left the country to participate to the Holy War, they had a conference and they were looking, asking the Belgian government to help them to bring back their children. And as you can see, we are talking about the civil war, and none of those things, they have any root in the reality of the Syria.
While the involvement of Saudi Arabia, Qatar, and other Gulf states sending in militants and mercenaries has been extensively documented by now, but I imagine that would have been only a small sample or group of the people you were speaking with in Syria when you went to look at people that were interested in peace. You were able to speak to a diverse array of groupings. So who in Syria were you able to speak with, maybe on both sides, in opposition and pro-government, that were involved in actually or interested in settling things?
We had the chance on our trip to Syria to have exchange with the officials. But in my opinion and opinion of some of friends, colleagues, it wasn't enough. That's why after the end of the mission, we tried to stay with Mother Agnes Mariam, a smaller group of the member, the delegation, and to go and visit the areas controlled by rebels. That was very risky and very dangerous decision. So after long and very difficult negotiation, we achieved that. So I don't want to go through those details, but just I want to let you know, yes, we had the occasion to listen and to talk with officials, but also with the civil society, with even the opposition member, and the people that they've been the leader of different parties, Communist Party, Socialist Party, the Turkmens, the Kurds, different minority. I give you an example. We met with the Kurdish politician, which passed 21 years in Syrian jail. He has been tortured, and then in this situation he was released. But a very solid member of the opposition. But talking with him, he ensured us that he supports the Syrian regime and President Assad against those foreign mercenaries and against this so-called revolution. But finally, there is nothing that we can call it revolution. The very legitimate aspiration of the Syrian youth at the beginning has been hijacked by those foreign mercenaries, and especially by foreign actors like NATO, Turkey, Saudi Arabia, and even further Israel, for sure, and even further United States and European ex-colonial European forces like France.
It's unfortunate that the conflict has unfolded in this way. There still are people in Syria talking about reform on one side and people backing the existing government on the other. You have encountered people who have been harmed by this conflict, and by the government, by the opposition, many of whom still are willing to discuss solutions. So I'm wondering, what does that involve for different groupings? What's their vision of peace? What's their vision of an end to the conflict? That's one thing I'd like to know. And the other is, you mentioned one person who had come over to the government side from the opposition. I don't think, you know, a peace negotiation requires people to do that, but it is notable that this foreign presence has soured the experience of many of the opposition.
Yeah, and we met a lot of people like that, and we we talk with them, and they said very clearly, we are still opponent of the regime, but if we are forced to choose between two bad and worse, so for sure we choose the government. So and that's why we see after 30 months, 2 years and a half, with all those investment and all those pretext that they created to put down the president and the Syrian regime, they didn't succeed because more and more the social base of the regime grows, contrary to the pretension of the Western media and Western politicians and the rebels. I give you an example. We are talking about the refugees. Most of the time we are talking about the refugees outside of the country, and rarely the big part of the refugees which are the displaced people inside of the country, almost more than 6 million. But we never mention among those 6 million people, almost 5 million, they are they choose Damascus as a place, a safe place. The Damascus, which is controlled by regime and army.
Okay, so wait.
If this regime is that horrible, and that the regime who massacre the population, so how come those people, they come and they seek refuge in the place that is controlled by the regime?
Okay, so I see. The refugees are predominantly going into government-controlled areas. They're voting with their feet, so to speak. I guess they don't feel safe in the rebel areas.
For sure.
These are the kind of difficulties that happen when you bring in foreign involvement of this nature. But you were able, in any case, to catch a number of these voices and look at efforts. And there had been other people working on that as well. One name that keeps coming up with you is Mother Agnes Miriam of the Cross.
Mm-hmm.
And that's come out in the literature and the peace movement that's been going around. I've seen some of the media releases. So you had seen some of that work or encountered some effects. What was happening with regard to her organizing, and what was she trying to do with regard to a peace initiative?
Yeah, she is very active. She has one of the rare people who still has the good relation with opposition and with the officials, with the government. As I understand, everybody knows, she is a religious person, and she doesn't do the politics, and she been in the she's a nun, and she been in the monasteries for a long time. So basically, anything she does, it's humanitarian. But and especially directly with the people. And we've been witness. When I told you about our trip last May to Syria, I forgot to mention that was initiated by Mairead McGuire, the Nobel Peace Laureate, and one of the wonderful leaders and activists for peace and justice, social justice in the world. But Mother Agnes, she played a very important role because as a foreigners, we didn't have contact with the Syrian reality. And she was the only person who could bring us to the real Syrian and show us the, especially with the, for part of the delegation, which I was among in the second part of the mission, to show us the two sides of the Syrian reality, the official governmental, pro-governmental side, and the rebel side. And we had, when we listened to the narrative of journalists, even the journalists who are, or the people who are in Syria, or they are visiting Syria, they don't have, most of the time, this privilege and this possibility to have direct contact with two realities, two opposite realities. Usually they are reporting from the rebel parts or sometimes from the official governmental parts.
Uh-huh. So what we have here is perhaps a success of alternative media. I think in the case of Mother Agnes Miriam, that she was first interviewed by an Irish activist. Then she was toured by activist groups in Ireland, eventually Australia. Then she got picked up by the mainstream media for a bit. So, yeah, it's good that this kind of media is available. That's one aspect of it. The other seems to be this Nobel Peace involvement, Peace Prize, Peace Committee. Now I'm told that Mother Agnes Miriam is being nominated for a Nobel Peace Prize. So why do you think that is?
I think we you know, there are many people that who are really, especially this year, that we have the soldier Manning, you know, we have which supported by Mary McGuire. And she is working for Soldier Manning for his nomination for Nobel Prize, Peace Prize. But among the very important people, I think, and I am promoting the idea of nomination of Mother Agnes, because when we see more than 2 years what she is doing and her contribution, it's amazing. The last contribution very lately was her report about the chemical attack of last August, 21st August, on the Damascus neighboring areas. So she very clearly she proved that most of the photos, most of the videos, that clips that we saw on internet, they were fake. Most of the kids that they showed us the photo has been killed. Those kids, those innocent infants, they've been kidnapped several weeks ago by the rebels, by the Salafis and foreign mercenaries from the areas more than 150, 200 kilometers far than Damascus. The areas, the Alawite areas of Latakia, and the villages and cities around this the Latakia, which is the native land of the president and his tribe and the supporters. So those kids has been kidnapped 2-3 weeks ago when the rebels attacked those areas and brought to the neighborhood of Damascus, and then has been gassed or somehow killed and photographed and filmed and then presented as victims of the chemical attack of Assad, personally Assad, not the Syrian army, not the Syrian government, Assad army and Assad government or Assad as a person. So she, with her work, she is contributing to really to help the reality comes out.
With reference to the chemical weapons story, that seems to be more of a political story than anything, because the U.S. has already decided. They say, well, it's Syria, trust us, we have the evidence, don't wait for other people to show you. You know, they sort of start from the premise, the idea that the Syrian government committed chemical atrocities. Mm-hmm. They say they refuse to talk about possible rebel chemical weapons used. So they've reached a verdict before the trial and before the evidence has been presented. But that's something that Mother Agnes Miriam of the Cross had been involved with from the start. That is this sort of skepticism or dissatisfaction. I think dissatisfaction with the reporting on the conflict is what brought her into this. Well, one thing I was going to potentially ask was, with regard to Mother Agnes Miriam, it seems to be the case, as you've pointed out, that there are some parties, some groupings that don't want to end this conflict. Is she running into this kind of opposition to a settlement?
They are, as you say, there are some group and some people that they don't want to end the conflict, and they can't imagine it can be another position, a third position, which is neutral and defending the interest of the Syrian people, and which is independent from the officials, government, and the rebels. Those people can't imagine we can have that kind of position. And I think the Mother Agnes activities and the position is this third position. But they are trying to assimilate her to the Syrian authorities. And this is very clear because as long as this chaos and the destruction and massacre continue, I think that make Syria weaker and weaker, and this is one of the objectives of the people who start this flame, this destructive flame. We are talking about the problems, and we are talking about the unbelievable suffering of the Syrian people, the forgotten element of the forgotten part of this history, because the narrative we hear it's about Assad and about the civil war, but the real victims is forgotten, and rebels and so on. We have to talk about the future, the perspective. What we have to do to get out of this lose-lose situation since 30 months, and make it win-win situation for the Syrian people. I think this is the huge task that we have as anti-war and peace movement activists in the world.
Yes, I think you've presented a very compelling case. I guess, you know, we've heard calls for supporting rebels and calls for military intervention from people like John McCain and Stephen Harper here in Canada and the U.S. It's a powerful voice we're hearing, but now we've also had the chance to hear from you, and we've witnessed something that's unprecedented perhaps in modern history, and that is a war was canceled, or at least put on hold temporarily.
That's great. That's why, you see, we have to put an end to this chain of continuous war since at least two decades by American and their allies under any kind of justification and lies and pretext. One thing is clear. Empire wants his war. Empire is looking for his war and didn't change idea yet. But this time, the power of the people, the resistance, it was amazing. We succeed in three levels, and we have to continue our tremendous work and wonderful job. We succeed to transform the public opinion and around the world with alternative medias and as I said, wonderful the work of solidarity with the Syrian people. And we saw the impact of the opinion people in the decision of the England, the Parliament of England. That was unprecedented. So that was the first level. And second level, which was very important work also, and I was part of that, and we did a lot with Mary Maguire and other networks around the world, England, Belgium, France, everywhere. We continue to put the pressure on the institutions, ONGs, and parliamentaries and even religious communities and groups. I remind you, the Pop Apple was wonderful, you know, one day fast for the international for all Christian and Catholic prayer for Syria and against the war, and mobilization of all those the non-governmental and the international organization. And third level was the diplomacy. And that level also, I think, we succeed to block the plan of those warmongering, because at the level of democracy, with intervention of the President Putin and with the plan that has been presented, it last hours, last minutes, the peace movement succeed to block the plan of war.
Yes, I think that encompasses a lot of what happened. And by the end of it, we've seen two different strategies at play. One is this grassroots peace movement and initiative that is occurring all over the world and also inside Syria. And then you have, on the other hand, this drive to war, which has produced the consequences we're already familiar with in Syria. So we can only hope that we can continue to move ahead on this grassroots effort and not have this bloodshed and continuous proxy war that occurs in Syria and is bound to occur in other places if we don't stop it. So glad you've been working on this, and I know you've been working with some very talented people. We might hear about more of their exploits, and we'll put up links as to where people can find more information. So, Amir, I just wanted to thank you for being with us today on the program.
Thank you for inviting me, and I was very glad. I'm very glad to talk to you.